3P05, welcome to the first week's worth of content we'll be getting into. Last week was a bit of an introduction. I hope you've watched the video that was posted under the course readings, and I've had a chance to listen to most of your audio responses so far. It's good to get to know about some of you. I clearly remember many of you from other courses I've taught in, but that was always nice to hear your voices, and it's also just good to see that you understand the audio response format and function, so well done there. It seems like there's no problems from what I've seen so far. It is going to be up to you to make sure that you're checking back on Brightspace, just to make sure that you're keeping up with the audio lectures, which are right here. So if you're listening to this, you're doing a good job there. Just also the form responses, your form question is posted every Monday, and from there you'll have to fill that in within a week as well. So you've got your audio responses, you've got the form responses, you've got the audio lecture, and your form question is going to be given in the audio lecture itself as well. So it's important that you're able to keep abreast of this, and that you're listening to the sort of course content, as you're going to have to specifically address issues that we raised in the audio lectures. So with that being said, I think it's a good time to get started from the very beginning, and just sort of giving you an overview of what a nonprofit is, how it functions, how it's different from other similar organizations, and how it is different from registered charities, for instance. A good overview is in a video, so make sure if you have not seen that video, that small video, it's only about 3 minutes long. You can pause here and have a look there. Just as another quick note, if you're listening to this on this Brightspace page, that's totally fine. If you use Spotify, I've included the Spotify link. If that's one of the platforms that you use, I believe this is also on Amazon Music as well. I believe it is on Apple Podcasts as well. If someone could let me know whether or not it actually made it to the store, that would be great. It should be there pretty soon. You can listen to this while you're on the bus or at the gym or even in your room. It doesn't really matter. But the point is, if you're able to actively engage with it while you're listening, if you're able to take a few notes on your phone, if you're able to write some things down, your life will be a lot easier when it comes time to doing your writing assignments, certainly, but also your form responses as well. And I am just warning you now in advance, I do ask for specific references at specific times to things that are said. So if there's something that you note that you think is interesting or that you think is important, write down the time in which you heard it during the audio lecture. It'll save you a bit of time. It's like a form of citation for these audio lectures. The title of this first lecture is Function and Form, the Nonprofit Sector in North America. I've even included a little bit of some slide materials as well to sort of guide you through it, is just to give you something visual to latch on to as well. Again, it'll be helpful when you're going to do your writing assignments, as I've got citations on the actual slides themselves. In addition, I've also included a small reading this week that you should to get done at some point throughout the week. This one's very, very, very small. Again, as we start to raise the bar for you, if you're in your third year, there is a bit more reading that's expected of you as you go along this course. You've probably already noticed that. Certainly as you enter into year three, this course isn't exactly gigantic in terms of the reading expectations, but it is larger than in other courses. And I think you'll find in the sort of course component, in addition to when you're working with the nonprofits themselves, which we'll get into towards the end of the lecture, as we're going to be getting into that in pretty soon, probably in the next coming weeks. It will be easier if you're able to reference the actual materials from the readings themselves. If you're just able to do them as we go along, that is way easier than having to cram them all in right before your writing assignment is due. But that being said, we're moving into our slides from the day, or our format of the day, which is describing the function and form of the nonprofit sector in North America. Now, again, and if we were in person, I would say this to you in person, and it's true right now, I understand. This course is a requisite course, and your level of interest in nonprofits, I know, is going to vary. From some of you, I'm sure, even have experience working with them. I'm sure many of you have possibly even some interest in working with nonprofits in the future. It is also possible, it is even indeed likely, that some of you have absolutely no interest in working with nonprofits at all, and that this course was not exactly high on your list of interests when you saw it on the course listing, and that's totally fine. Right? I understand that move going into this, and I'm well aware of sort of the thought of maybe working with nonprofits not being as shining bright as working with the pro sports industry. That being said, it's extremely important that we understand what it is that we're talking about. We briefly talked about that in the opening lecture here, but let's know what it is that we're maybe not so excited about first before we make any decisions about our future career paths. So referencing scholarship from Lester Salomon and Helmut K. Einheyer, essentially, they describe broadly the economy in this following ways. They say there are two ways of classifying the ways that human beings organize themselves for political, social, and economic action. And these can be broadly defined as the market in the state or the public and the private sector. So sometimes you'll see it referred to as the public and the private sector, or the market and the state. The market and the state, not so common in North America scholarship. You probably have heard of the public sector. You probably have heard of the private sector. You've probably heard of these things quite frequently. Maybe you've heard of working in the public sector. Maybe you've heard jobs described as private sector industry, those types of things. And you're probably familiar with what that means. But the nonprofit sector is in a different sort of space. And that's what Salomon and Einheyer get into in this article. A distinct yet difficult to define sector exists outside yet interconnected with these first two sectors, which occupies a far larger role in the delivery of public services than is generally accepted by the public. And that absolutely applies to sport. That is, in fact, the delivery of sport. And this is something you are going to get sick and tired of me saying frequently throughout this semester. But sport in this country and in North America and even globally more broadly is delivered by and executed by and essentially dependent on the nonprofit sector. So essentially this third sector, this distinct from the public, it's not quite the public sector that is referred to as things that are under the operation, direct operation of the government itself. Something like the Ministry of Sport would be an example of that, or Sport Canada, for instance, that is the public sector in general. The private sector being a private organization, something like Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, that would constitute the private sector. But you see here, the idea is there are sort of these two broadly classical definitions of how human beings organize, this public and private, or market and state, but the nonprofit is neither public nor private. It is not solely dependent on government funds, and it is not solely dependent on private industry. It lives in this in-between world. It means that the industry itself is organized differently, delivers programming differently, funds itself differently, and it is able to sometimes avoid challenges that one sector gets into and avoid challenges. And to be honest, also has some challenges unique to itself. So again, that's the number one point I want you to come away with right away here. We've got the market, we've got the state, we've got the public, we've got the private. We have this third sector. We have it distinct from both of them. That's the nonprofits. Thayer Scott elaborates the main terms which have been used to mark off this area of activity as a sector are each associated with the different disciplines and foci. These five favorite titles are the nonprofit sector, not-for-profit sector, voluntary, third, and independent. Essentially what this means is there's basically a million different ways of describing this third sector, and the way in which you describe it, be that from Canada, from what depending on what part of the industry that you're actually in, actually says a lot about your expertise and your disposition towards the nonprofit sector itself. So in doing so, when we actually define the sector, we actually are telling us a little bit about where we are in terms of our method of study. For example, if you're an economist, you might opt to use the definition that befits their focus on the market or for-profit sector as the norm. They tend to see the activity, which is not productive in the sense of profit-making, as a residual and relatively minor realm of activity. So essentially what we're saying here is, if you're an economist, you might think to yourself, well, the primary purpose of an economy is to produce profits. So again, if you are trying to imagine what the default system is of an economy, that you would default to profit-making enterprises. And Thayer Scott also notices that lawyers and accountants tend to use a much more precise version of the term here. And again, this seems like extremely unimportant details at this early stage, but it is important when we're talking about what it is that we're actually studying here. But if you're a lawyer, you're an accountant, you might be more likely to use the word not-for-profit to acknowledge the market transactions do not always yield a profit, while some activities with primarily social or other social-oriented purposes may produce surplus revenues. And this takes us to one of the most important parts of our distinction early on here when we're talking about nonprofits or not-for-profits, depending on what you wanted to use it to describe them. When we say nonprofit, this does not mean non-revenue. Okay, that is so, so, so important. This does not mean that nonprofits don't have salaried employees, for instance. This does not mean that nonprofits don't have a ton of revenue generated through their programming. It doesn't mean that they don't deal with lots and lots of money at times. I mean, again, depending on the size of your nonprofit, a nonprofit the size of, say, Hockey Canada, for instance, deals with hundreds of millions of dollars in a year or over the course of a number of years. This is, again, very different from, say, a local a local sports organization, like perhaps the youth soccer association you played for growing up or the youth baseball association you played for growing up. But still, it is important to note that not-for-profit doesn't mean non-revenue. It certainly doesn't mean no money is exchanged. It certainly doesn't mean that no money can change hands. That's extremely important as to keep in mind here. That's why when we use the word not-for-profit, what it basically focuses there is the intention of the activity, is the stated purpose of this activity to generate profits. Now, again, we'll talk about this frequently throughout the semester, the differences, and there are many between the not-for-profit and the for-profit sector. But again, there are many limitations that occur in the for-profit sector because of that basic fact, the fact that the primary operating focus of the private sector is to generate profit, obviously, right? And you need to come into third year university here, Brock, to know that. You already know that simply probably before you were in middle school. You understand those things. But sometimes we can forget those things when we're looking at the way that sport is delivered. Now, at this stage, I want to engage in a cliche that I'm sure you're familiar with here, and that is that sports are big business, or sports are just a business, or sports are a business, or some version of that cliche, which you've heard a number of times, I'm sure, in your life, and I'm sure you'll use it continually. In fact, you might even hear that frequently when you're talking with your friends and family about terms of the various dynamics of a sports league that you follow, and that is true. Okay, professional sport is a business, right? And with that, generally speaking, that cliche normally is applied to the fact that it can be cruel, or it's unfeeling, or sort of the points that come along with some of the ugliness of professional sports. Now, again, I think it's telling that sometimes we use the denomination of it being a business to denote things that are unseemly. That says more about our views towards business sometimes than it does towards sports, but still, we'll leave that as it is right now. In that way, though, not all sports are profitable business. We'll say that 100%. Right, then that is true. Not all professional sport is profitable, certainly, but not all sport and the delivery of sport, capital S sport delivered in any method that you may imagine it, is profitable. Not because it's bad, not because it's not an effective strategy, or it's not because it's not governed properly, though that can happen as well, but that's just not the way that sport is organized in so many fashions. So again, when we focus on the intention, not for profit, meaning we know what we're doing is not specifically designed to generate profits, it helps us understand what the heck we're actually doing here. Because this is something that I want you to keep in your mind at all times. When you are evaluating nonprofits, when you're going to be doing your community engagement report, when you're working with a nonprofit yourself a little bit later on this semester. What are the organizing principles of this organization? There are many parts of society that are organized in this same fashion, right? Again, with an example here is we often hear public transit, hospitals, things like that we equate as services. And something that, again, this is a little bit off to task here in a little bit, but when you hear about some of these businesses generating large losses, again, sometimes we can get a little bit distracted from what it is that they are trying to provide to us as citizens who pay tax. Again, these are services. They're not necessarily designed to generate profit. So when we take a profit mindset and apply to every aspect of our lives, including sport, sometimes these things don't necessarily apply. Now, that does not excuse financial mismanagement of nonprofits. Certainly, we're not going to let nonprofits off the hook that easy. We're going to talk about that throughout this semester over and over and over again. But in your head, keep that in mind, that if you have that not-for-profit distinction, doesn't mean that no money is exchanged, doesn't mean you can't make a career working in this industry, doesn't mean that millions of dollars aren't necessarily exchanged. It just means that the purpose of the activity is not about generating profits, not about generating a dividend for a shareholder, it's not about increasing a stock price. Okay, and again, I think that is one of the most important distinctions to get in our heads. It's also one of the parts that I think confuses people the most, that point right there. Because again, if you think of what a charity is, and again, if you look at that video again, or you can read the documents that we posted this week, they have a similar idea here. And their goal is also not to generate profits as well, obviously, as a starting point, no kidding. But their goal over and above all that is to provide some sort of public good, right? And again, that's why when you donate to a charity, you have the ability to receive a charitable tax deduction, whereas if you donate to a nonprofit, you don't. So we'll get into that a little bit later on this semester as well and into more detail in the actual readings you'll be doing. But I think that's an important part to pause and discuss that level of intentionality when we're using the actual definition of what a nonprofit is. Political scientists, of course, orient themselves first to the realm of government and politics and are therefore inclined to use the term this emerging sector, the nonprofit sector, as independent vis-a-vis government or to refer to it as the third sector. So sometimes poli-sci people will describe this as the independent sector or a third sector. Now, again, we don't really use these definitions. I just want to make you clear, just so when you're doing your readings, if you see voluntary sector or independent sector or third sector, you know we're all talking about the same thing. They also might draw attention to the stabilizing and experimental functions of the sector in relation to social stability and social change. Sociologists, as Thayer Scott notes, are more interested in the sociality, participation, and association that are general in this sphere, and so tend to favor the term voluntary. So sociologists describe what it is that, again, is the organizing principle of those actually working for this sector, and that's voluntary. I don't love that one. It's not as applicable to sports. We don't really use that one very often. But again, keep your eyes peeled if you do see that in the literature. If you see the voluntary sector, you see that sometimes in Europe. Often they refer to it as the voluntary sector as well. But that's, again, just where we're still just drawing a line into the sand in terms of what it is that we're actually talking about here. But a distinct delineation exists between the definition and function of a charitable organization or philanthropic organization and the legal definition of a nonprofit organization. Now, again, this is really, really important as well. And again, I know this first lecture isn't exactly maybe necessarily thrilling stuff, but it's so important here that we establish this right out the gates. Okay? So now we know that nonprofit doesn't mean non-revenue. Now that we know that there are industries that you're, or nonprofits that you can work in and generate a salary and we could make a career in. And there are many that you can volunteer for as well. But there is a very, very, very important distinction between charitable organizations and nonprofit organizations. In Canada, a nonprofit cannot provide tax receipts for donations, while a registered charitable organization can. Both organizations are formed to engage with and assist their communities directly, but their statuses differ with regards to monetary donations. In a few weeks, we're going to talk about why that's extremely important in terms of the generation of donations themselves. Many of you are going to be working with organizations in that very capacity, trying to manage the influx of donations or how donations are functioning within an organization, and you'll get to learn this from the inside out. In the first place, a critical distinction needs to be drawn between philanthropy on one hand and the private nonprofit sector on the other. Too often these terms are treated interchangeably, and the nonprofit sector is considered essentially equivalent to private charity. In fact, however, philanthropy is really just a part of the nonprofit sector. So again, all charities are nonprofits, but not all nonprofits are charities. That is how I would sort of square this in your mind. Okay? So the organizing principles behind philanthropy. So again, if you've ever heard of that word, philanthropy or philanthropic, meaning an organization designed to serve the public good. The philanthropic organizations that we imagine, let's say the Red Cross, Planned Parenthood, many of these philanthropic organizations that hit you up for money, and we'll be talking about that a little bit later on in the semester as well, in terms of tactics and things like that, are distinct from nonprofit organizations. And the reason that you're all here, the reason that we are asking you to learn these things, is because nonprofit organizations are responsible for the delivery of such a large component of sports organizations, which again does not mean that charities are responsible for the delivery of sports. Now I hope that this is becoming clear in your head, right? Charitable organizations, not necessarily, I mean, I'm almost certain of this, did not deliver the sport that you grew up playing, no matter what sport that was, whether it was swimming, whether it was basketball, whether it was hockey. Generally speaking, charities were not responsible for organizing that sport, delivering it, making sure that there were refs, making sure that there was ice time, making sure that there was equipment and safety and insurance and all of those things. That wasn't done necessarily by charities. And again, it goes back to what Thayer Scott was talking about when we refer to the intentionality behind it. Now again, we will discuss again the actual inner workings of and what makes a good nonprofit, what makes one effective, but it's just important to just stake this claim right now. The nonprofit sector is a set of private organizations providing a wide variety of information, advocacy, and services. Philanthropy, by contrast, is the giving of gifts of time or other valuables, money, securities, property, for public purposes. Philanthropy or charitable giving is thus just one form of income of private nonprofit organizations. So yes, you can have people give towards nonprofits. In fact, some do. Many donate large amounts of money to some of the nonprofits you are familiar with that organize sport. Hockey Canada being one of them. People donate money to Hockey Canada frequently, not because they're a charity, because they're a nonprofit that delivers a public service. To be sure, some nonprofit organizations have the generation of charitable contributions as their principal objective, but these are not the only types of nonprofit organizations, and private charitable contributions are not the only source of nonprofit income. That is very important. And again, something that I get, the closer that we study these nonprofits, you're going to become more and more familiar with. And again, if you keep imagining ourselves with these large NSOs like Basketball Canada, Hockey Canada, Canada Soccer, again, you can see that they don't necessarily always just look around for donations. They generate revenue in other ways, ways that I know that you are being trained in here at Brock, whether that's sponsorship development, community relationships, all those types of things. So again, you can see again why your skills that you're developing here could lend themselves well one day to working with one of those large organizations. This is another really important piece here when we're describing what a nonprofit is, and something that's very unique to Canada. Canadian federal income tax law distinguishes between, quote, nonprofit organizations and, quote, registered charities. To qualify as an NPO, and I'll often say NPO, this semester is just easier for me to say NPO than nonprofit organizations over and over and over again. An entity must meet three tests. So we're going to decide whether or not this organization is a nonprofit or a charity. There are three things we look to. And the first way of deciding whether if your organization qualifies as an NPO, the number one thing, it cannot be a charity or an organization that could be registered as a charity. So again, that's one of the first and most important tests. If you're going to be considered an NPO, you cannot be a charity. Second, it must be organized and operated exclusively for a purpose other than profit. Now again, this sounds extremely obvious, right? And again, I want to keep in your minds here what it is that we're talking about when we talk about nonprofits. And I'm saying basically here, did you know that nonprofits are a nonprofit? Yes, that's true. But it goes back to that level of intentionality. And especially as I'm trying to broaden your definition of what a nonprofit is, at the same time, I need you to keep in your minds that second test when we talk about this larger world. So I'm here to open your eyes to some of the larger organizations that are nonprofits. Some sports leagues that you know are actually organized as nonprofits. And then keep that second test in mind. In fact, I encourage you, if you've got spare time right now, look up a league that, especially look up junior leagues throughout this country. Have a look. You can even see it on Wikipedia. It'll say it's a registered Canadian nonprofit or on the About Us section of a website. Maybe it's a junior basketball league or even a junior baseball, junior hockey league. Have a look. Many of them are organized as nonprofits, and keep that in mind. In fact, I've posted a link on the course reading section for week two that'll enable you to actually search for any organization that you'd like to throughout Canada. Just search by name, and you can search there. For instance, if you searched Canadian Hockey League, you'll be able to see the nonprofit registration of that hockey league. And that's the governing organization that oversees the QMJHL, the WHL, and the OHL. But there you can see, and you can have a look at how many organizations that deliver sport and hold tournaments and sell merchandise and have a very valuable IP associated with their logo, for instance, are actually registered as nonprofits. And you can see why it is so important to keep that second test in mind when we are evaluating NPOs themselves. They have to be organized and operated exclusively for a purpose other than profit. Third, no part of its income may be paid or made available for the personal benefit of any proprietor, member, or shareholder. This is the sort of rule of a nonprofit organization. And again, that applies to all organizations that are sought to be incorporated by the Not-for-Profit Corporations Act in Canada. And then there is this glorious little detail here that you can find on the Canadian tax code. There's an in brackets exception. It says, no part of the income may be paid or made available for the personal benefit of any proprietor, member, or shareholder, with an exception for amateur athletic organizations. It sounds like I'm making a big deal out of something very small, but if you're familiar with tax code in general, it's not big on exceptions. Okay? If you are familiar with the way that the tax structure of this country and every country works, it is extremely detail-oriented, and it is very, very unique to have specific language written into the tax code, which provides an exception for something to do with sport. But it does right here. And the reason for this goes back to some things we talked about in 2P06, if you recall. We talked about amateurism and the legacy of amateur sport in this country. And we talked about this a little bit in 1P93 as well, if you were in that course with me going back a couple of years. but we talked about how important amateur sport was to many Canadians and what amateur sport entailed and the sort of level of society that we were mentioning when we discussed amateurism. This is another example of sort of a vestigial member of that that long and strong legacy. But essentially here is where we're going to cease for the day here. This is our final little bit of importance here, is this crucial exception in the Canadian tax code that really does provide the lifeblood of nonprofit sport organizations in this country. Without that little exception, there would be no framework to have not-for-profits that are organized for the purposes of sport. But don't forget what that exception applies to. It's not about the existence of sport. It's about the exemption for the paying of salaries, basically for the use of its income. That is extremely important as well when you consider how some nonprofits spend their money. So here we are going to end this sort of content part of this lecture. I encourage you again to have a look at the visual materials as they've been posted on the course reading section, but also have a look at the readings themselves. And you can have a look at that link that I posted earlier. But we are now going to move to the form response for the week. So with no further ado, here is your form response question for your first form response. Does freedom comfort you at night while you read the news by candlelight? Just as a reminder about the format of the form responses themselves, you're going to find it on Brightspace. There's a tab that says form responses. That's where you're going to be giving them. You are going to be doing one of these per week. The folder opens on a Monday. So if you're listening to this on Monday, that's fantastic. And it closes on Friday at 11:59 p.m. So you have the whole week to do it. You have to do this. I'm asking for between 350 and 500 words. I understand that that's a little bit of writing. I totally understand that. But again, I'm not looking necessarily for a lot of deep citations here. I'm looking for the ability for you to engage with the course materials, engage with these audio lectures, prove that you're listening to them. And again, just as a quick note as well, Brightspace and like Sakai, even though Sakai may have appeared a low-tech system, Brightspace and Sakai are both extremely good at letting me know just how much you are actually engaging with this material. So come the end of semester, I'll know, you know, what was clicked on, how long you listened to it for, how many times it was accessed. I know all that stuff by the end of the semester, and that stuff does matter, and that applies for all of your courses as well. Just keep that in mind, that we all can see how much you're actually engaging the resources and whether or not you're just clicking on all of them once so that we can see that. It is a relatively powerful tool, so if you are engaging with it, this is a way to just get credit for it and engage with this material and essentially not be left behind as we move forward. So keep that in mind when you're making your form responses. But the thing that I really want you to do is if when you're referencing specifically something from the audio lecture, you do in your writing, you can just write, as was discussed in this week's audio lecture, we talked about the definitions of nonprofits, and then a point that we discussed, maybe it was the point about intentionality, and then you can write, you know, just in brackets, 1432, or whatever minute it was that we discussed, that just when I go and check, I can say, oh, yep, they were listening. That'll improve your mark on your response even more. So that brings us to this week's question. I want you to think about the things that we've talked about today in the audio lecture. Consider the materials that we've posted here. The video from last week is just the start of it. Also those visual slides that I've posted as well. And what I want you to do is consider that second test. The second test that applies to all organizations that want to become an NPO. How well do you think many sports NPOs, and you can do an evaluation of any NPO that you imagine here, but how well do you imagine that sports not-for-profit organizations fit that definition, the second test that we mentioned from Revenue Canada? So again, if you recall what that second test was, I want you to have a look around and you can say, you know, hey, I think that they fit really well, or hey, I don't think this organization fits terribly well. If you want to use a specific organization as an example, feel free to do that. But I want you to evaluate that second test and let me know how you think sports organizations are meeting or failing that very, very basic test of whether or not they are an NPO. And again, I'm going to put a link on there as well that allows you to search all the nonprofit organizations that you'd like. So you can just search if you're a fan of football or baseball or softball, whatever. You can just type that sport into the corporation name and you'll see all the ones that come up. Hockey comes up as well. And again, have a look at which ones are actually registered as nonprofits. You might surprise yourself by learning some of the ones that are actually registered in that way. But let me know what your thoughts are on that second test. Also make specific reference to something we talked about in the audio lecture if you want to make sure that you're getting full credit. So that's your goal for this week, is to do that. And on Wednesday, I'm going to ask you for an audio response question, and you'll have until Sunday night to respond to that as well. And that's this week's worth of material. So I hope to, again, hear from you in your audio responses coming up. And I can't wait to hear from you soon. And I hope you all have a wonderful day.